Yes, please start recording. Thank you. Thank you. Let's just do a microphone check as well as just confirm who's here again, so if we can just do a quick roll call. So it's Bruce Tolkien, chair of this committee on UGGLD. Just want to start down at the other end there, Brenda, just as for the last couple of days, just adding your name and your role.
My name is Roger Taub. I'm from Horn Gang of Sir.
Donna Austin, speaking with Anthology Support.
Brett Fawcett, the at-large liaison to GNSA.
Alfred Dorian, I'm from Appointee.
Denise Michelle, again, like from that policy. Glenn Hughes-Ashby, the GNSA French period.
Personally, I'd like to answer that.
Dan Haller, again, Scott.
Maryland State Business Constituency.
Jim McNeil, Stella.
Tony Holmes, RSPCP.
Craig Schwartz, I'm Scott.
Richard Decker, Intellectual Property Constituency.
Chuck Gomes, Bursan, and Registry.
Thank you. I'll just sort of try to pull together, I guess, the main summary of what we covered yesterday, just to refresh people's memory and perhaps structure a little bit more than it was when it was being developed. Yesterday we talked about essentially a process of string checks, so that would consist of staff making a determination and making them gauge appropriate expert advice if they need to. There'd be a public comment process, and those public comments would need to be specific to the criteria for a new string, so not just random comments, but would need to be structured such that if you were complaining about a string relevant to a particular criteria, you need to provide the appropriate evidence. If staff think there may be an issue, then it's put to a panel of experts with appropriate background. Under string criteria, we had that the string should not be confusingly similar to an existing TLD string. Confusingly similar means there is a likelihood of confusion on the part of the relevant public. The string must not infringe the legal rights of any third party. That's basically just a shorthand version of what was in the registrar agreement. The string should not cause technical issues, e.g. should not be .localhost.exe, etc. The string should not be, I'll just put this in red because the wording is obviously not right yet, but this is the government public policy bit. The string should not be whatever that government policy bit is. The string should not be a reserved word. So essentially I'm just trying to get the sense that we have a process for evaluating strings, we have a set of criteria that we're evaluating those against, and then we have different dispute resolution processes. There was a dispute resolution process where existing registry operators could challenge a decision made by staff regarding whether or not a string is confusingly similar to an existing string. If the string is successfully challenged as being misleadingly similar, it should be confusingly similar, then no operator may subsequently reach through. And then we also had a dispute resolution process for trademark holders where existing trademark holders could challenge the string based on, the UDRP process. So that essentially,
You're making reference to an assumption that the existing UDRP process would work.
I've put on baseball. And I don't know that we need to deal with that right now. That it could be reviewed.
And you might bring it in red for that reason, because the existing practice, I don't believe, is going to work without modification because of the turnaround.
Oh, just the time frame involved in the change, yeah.
So we can
just let
that take it,
I mean, that's geared.
That's the right idea.
Yeah, yes. Yep. Yeah, this time I'm not the red bed in the real life. I'm assuming that the whole system around there, I'll fix it up a little bit and adjust it. Doesn't need to be called UDRP, but using that as the model. Now, under allocation, yes, I was saying initially use rounds as a start date. We don't set the applications as a close date. Strings being applied for are not published until after the close date. However, when a string conflict occurs, the parties in the conflict would be informed confidentially, and that puts the intent to allow them to.
I have a question about, so I'm trying to think about what we've done, what we did in the past. At what point were the strings published? Because if the strings are not published, then how do the previous steps work?
No, those steps occur after the close date.
Now, so if we're not publishing the string because we're afraid that other people will cyber or counter or...
That's right, yeah. It says it's not putting other applications, that's right. So that all the string checks actually occur after. So we've got a batch, we've got an at the start date and the close date.
Right.
Once we've got all the batch, we then start analysing the strings, which has been kind of one of the first things we're doing, and we publish those.
Right.
But what we're saying is that where two parties commit the same string in that early part of the process, confidentially they'd be notified, so they have an opportunity to try and resolve that issue in the time. No one's been told anything until the end of the round.
Okay.
So the change here would be that if there's a direct conflict.
Yes.
And I think that would be fairly direct that you're doing that. Yeah. So two people put in dot web, for example, and that sort of stuff. I don't think we're talking about the scenario where we're comparing travel with Artisan or something like that. Yeah.
There is one more slight complication with that, is it's when what materials are made public about the groups to bid. Now, that can be handled in different ways across different processes. Yeah, and there are portions of an application form that were made public, which is fine. For the purposes of public comment period.
Yeah, this is mainly around string and stuff. I don't imagine you're putting out the technical plan or anything like that. I don't think that's... But if you use the registrar approach, the registrar application that public, where the registrar is appointed or whatever it's called. Now, in resolving string conflicts, we said that the first thing is to ensure each of the conflicting applications is compliant with the process. Then there's a mediation process available with a bounded time frame. And if applicants choose not to use the mediation process, that's fine, as long as you're allowing them time to do that. And a possible solution is the applicants to choose different TLDs to avoid the conflict. And then if mediation is unsuccessful, then ITAM uses the additional criteria of the level of support of the community of potential registrants within that TLD to resolve the tension. Both applicants would have a time frame, for example, 90 days, to supply this additional material for evaluation. And we need to clearly define what evidence is acceptable. And rather than trying to define the process here, I think the key thing is to get the requirements. I think it needs to be measurable and verifiable. I don't know if anyone else has got any other ideas for words to add there, but it's kind of specifying what it needs to be doing rather than trying to work out the business at the moment. And Dan?
Just tell me if this is stuff we can hammer out later. But do I understand the question right, that we are going to reveal to some people the strings that have been applied for before the close date?
Is an match?
You would MK and MK, right? So doesn't need to tell...
FIFA on Australian football multiply for football.
But
then I let them know the data, what applications are in, whatever, a week later. Hey, you multiply for football, maybe one of you wants that's ordered on cars. Or
right, yeah. Yes. Well, no, you wouldn't. You would not suggest it. You would not suggest a strange
human. Not even the opportunity to
why wouldn't you wait
until
the end of the
period? Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. It might be cleaner just to do that. I'm just sort of wondering. I was kind of, because you put your staff in to make a judgment call on.
You need it more.
So, when you say wait until the end of the period, we need to wait for the name of the close.
Well, no, this was a suggestion, I think, that Tom Keller had. You know, we've just kind of questioning this. And I guess the difficulty is consistency, isn't it? Because the thing is, you're making staff judge whether the two streams are close enough together to notify those two parties.
He's giving the subordinates more permission than anyone else has given the applications or not.
Wait a minute. Here's the problem. I'm kind of trying to think this through. On day three, MKade and MK both file for the same string, right? If you don't, and the idea is I should be encouraged to file for Maryland Cade as opposed to NK. You're not going to tell me that. You're just going to say there's a duplicate application. I only have until the end of the period to change my mind or to merge with the other person. If you don't notify me and give me time to work that out, then you have to give me a grace period.
Well, what's that's the mediation period? So I'm thinking we should take that, and I understood that.
The close date, so we're not going to notify...
I think basically, you know, maybe everyone knows what's there then, and then you're encouraged those people that have got a conflict, so then it's another mediation.
And they still, and the mediation period gives them... Because 3 months... It's 90 days, and since no one knows that they have been awarded, in theory they're not putting in advance work anyway. So that's not biasing.
Is it? So, I mean, I think there's no easy answer to this. If we wait 3 months and then find there's two duck footballs and then let either or both of them pick a new string, they will see what everybody else is applying for. And one of them could switch to that shop, to that cars, or that...
Yeah.
I mean, that
web or something, it's not taking it. Well, it's a good point to say, because they have kind of got an application in the
system. So there's 10 dot sectors. Nine of them can just pick any answer they want without any contention, because they'll see whatever
they
want. Right. Yeah, but I anyway, yeah. I'm not quite sure what they
did. I mean,
that'd be a good thing, though.
Yeah, sort of, that's an advancement. Yeah, they've still got to do all the, got to meet the technical requirements, meet all the other things. What we're trying to do is resolve string conflicts here.
What do you think of having a 3 month period for the
period between start and close is if you choose to build the batch. And then when you build the batch, you're then looking for conflicts in that batch.
If 3 months is really too long, then I probably wouldn't give it much advance notice of her act. If 3 months is too short, then as the implementer, I would kind of use that 3 month period and then give advance notice if necessary to make it a reasonable amount of time. So if you want to say 1 week, I might give 3 months notice that here's the 1 week period. So I don't know how important it is.
There's nothing more happening in that gap than the simple application coming in.
Yeah, but...
Then I think it's one of the things that is long. It's better to have an education period.
That's long.
Yeah. In other words, if you're short with those, then when we come in, it's really not wasting time.
So you could change these variables to like 6 and 1, for example.
Yeah.
As long as you take into account people from developing countries and vacations, and you don't, you know, a 30-day period is actually a short period. You're dealing with remote communications and the need for people to travel during that time. So just keep that in mind. If you give 3 months notice, then maybe a month
is
short enough.
I think 2 months notice or so.
Oh.
It's giving us time. This is a good one for the proper application. And so you're saying, you know, 6 months' time is when we're going to start doing the application for the appointment. And then you have a close date. Well, you make that 2 months. That's not a guide for it.
Within 6 months, or something like that, because you get a lot of community complaints. The board, let's say the board approves it in February, that means you don't open the round until August, then you go another month, and I'm just thinking about how the community is going to respond to 6 months.
This is really, I was sort of imagining that that's a chance for the five people between the three. Because
yeah.
I was really saying that 6 months to sort of get your application together, to the close date, the three are sort of announcing how we've done. So that's why I think
it's also time for staff preparation after the board approves as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's also time for notification periods as well for FAQs to be established and for those questions and answers to be.
Like, you need that question mark because it's very
difficult. I have another question. Last question, what happens to the non-compliant? I mean, some people's non-compliant might be innocent non-compliant. Okay, somebody could come through with the name Hitler and then it's a sort of a flagrant non-compliance, but you could have an innocent non-compliance where somebody puts in a name that happens to be. Do those people get notified soon enough to come up with another name, or if you make a mistake and put in a name that is unacceptable to culture, that's never occurred to you. You're shut out. You know, I mean, I came up with a word that happened to be one of the 17 names of somebody's God.
I didn't know that. So could I expand your request? So it could be non-compliant in relation to the string because I filed the .exe because I did this understood. Couldn't it be non-compliant in terms of incomplete application, and I've omitted a critical piece of information in the past, we've gone back to applicants and let them fill in.
Well, let's just check that out. This is one of the things with WU that's been controversial, is that you had one data that your documentation is wrong, that's just you lose your spot. And that caused a lot of issues. But I thought on the downside of making it available is you end up with this huge staff thing with, this is one of the issues with registering accreditation, I guess, in the early days, not so much now that people have automated it, but, you're having to do a lot of work going backwards and forwards, and that raises the cost. So that's the balance. And so I'm not even talking about string complex at this stage, so, you know, you've got to find the last page, or you, page 5 is missing,
But I think on the name non-compliance, because it's so fuzzy, I mean, the cultural, political correctness criteria, it's quite possible innocently transgressed.
I had envisaged that term to being referring to the application is correct, not the string. I'm talking about the application being compliant, not the string. And the compliance that I was thinking of is in terms of, you know, filling the information, the pager fee, the highlights of stuff. And so, because the string stuff is really starting to be sorted out, you've done everything right. And then someone's raised an issue of the string, okay, there was an issue, well, I'll use this string, then I think it's fine. I'm talking about the compliance being, you get someone that basically submits an application or a piece of paper saying, you know, oh, I've got works on one sheet, I haven't bothered to fill in the form properly. But that's sort of stuff I'm saying that costs down at that point. If I haven't paid their fee or whatever it is.
Would it be helpful to add some sort of a statement that being tenth of the committee's recommendations in this regard are not to be rigid, but rather to allow some flexibility so that as the final wording is done, that principle is in there?
Well, that's really what all this is about. The staff did a lot of RFPs that has all that detail. We're not trying to write the RFPs.
I understand that. Marilyn, that was a good point. When people see some of this stuff, they're going to react and it's going to create a firestorm that we don't necessarily need, and So a little statement on like that would at least maybe mitigate some of that.
You made it at the beginning, or where would we make that statement?
Probably that would be a good place.
Again,
it, as long as it's there somewhere so that there's people understand that this isn't designed to try and rule people out, that the process is designed to be flexible enough so that if things happen, like Aubrey said, or...
I know, be careful with that, that you're making staff make judgment calls whether they're comfortable doing that. I think it's reasonable for staff to almost use a materiality with that. You know, like if there's something minor, you get it fixed, but it's kind of not a bang, bang, bang every day when the person up trying to get the reputation right. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's going to the next round.
A lot of statements to that effect.
Failure on our part to set up a process where because someone transmitted a document and accidentally somehow failed to transmit pages 5, 6, and 7, the rest of the document there is accurate. The cover letter says I attached 12 pages, so we didn't go back and say, please retransmit.
Yeah. So Donna Yee was like that. It is like that. Just give another example.
Now, when we do that, we have to be careful about the date timestamp issue, too, and how that's handled.
We prioritize those rather than the one that rushed in and got their application in a week before the...
In the 2000 round, I think there was actually a question that was submitted to ICANN saying, are you going to give any preference to person time, person right? And the response was that all applications submitted during this window were deemed to have been submitted at the same time. So as long as you made it by the deadline, you were all equal in time.
If I understand, I don't think we're in conflict, though. If I understand the intent of our language here, the date timestamp is the receipt of the application, so you start processing those first. I don't think it gives them any particular advantage, at least at this stage. Is that correct, while we're doing batch processing?
I think the intent, Chuck, is that you've got a batch and you resolve your string conflicts within the batch. The purpose of the batch is to do the string conflicts, really, because otherwise you can just process in an order of receipt. So we're saying that certainly in the early rounds we're going to get a bunch of, say, a bunch of people who aren't got web, well, we're going to resolve that issue. But then someone early on said they want IJK, and there's no string conflict and no other issue. Then I think should be able to start proceeding with IJK. That's really kind of, and then someone has, JKS or something after IJK, and they're done after IJK. I mean, it's just kind of, there's some sort of sense of priority.
And I think I think that's, and Ray can correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's consistent with the registration intent. The idea is that, one of the main concerns is that one particular applicant is held up because of problems with another one, and so they're delayed and their costs go up, so we have multiple costs going up. So I think we're okay with what Tim said.
Can I just ask everyone not to answer the question now, but to think about how many applications you think will receive? Pick a number, any number, and add it to the jelly bean jar.
You got 55 in 2000. I think it's reasonable that you get as many.
And 10 in 2004.
Mrs. Simmons very well taught that question.
About the application fee. Yeah.
Because it would be most of the application fee. If your application fee is $100, you'll get 10,000 applications. If your application fee is $10 million, you'll get 10.
That makes a difference too.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess in the first round, it is probably reasonable to give reasonable notice to the people when you start looking at the wider community, because then it will be our time, given 1 month, so everyone on the ground, this table will join in, because we all know about it, and it will be a series of, you know, regular citizens, essentially.
I think that's right, though, that we're going to see, you know, barring some exceptional fee or something like that, we're going to see as many as we saw in the first round, maybe more.
Yeah, I think you probably get a little more potentially, particularly if we start looking at some of the other issues. There's a timing thing going on here, but whether IDNs are involved.
Yeah, if IDNs
are involved, we don't know that yet. But, yeah.
Things by a large number.
Yeah. Yeah.
If IDNs are involved, you can triple that probably.
Yeah. And what you probably want to split the rounds in that case. So you have a round which is ASCII and then IDNs is the following round of some sort, just so you're not adding to it complexity at once.
Well,
we
have fallen behind by a lot. SES is ready at the same time IDNs are ready.
Yeah.
In the first round, that was before the bubble. The bubble round exploded.
I think one of the big factors in both the number of applications we're going to receive and how many it's to process them is what information we're asking for. If we have a model like the Register Accreditation Agreement where we ask for an overview of the business plan in some of the key paragraphs, that's one thing. If we ask companies to put in 5 years of audited financial statements, that's a totally different thing. And it raises the bar on who can apply and how much it costs to apply and how many lawyers you have to get to look at the application, how many lawyers it takes to review the application.
So look, we're jumping around things here a little bit, and I don't want to end up again trying to find micromanage this. So just to address this issue about the compliance thing, I've just used wording saying, sure, it's completing applications compliant with some flexibility to correct trivial issues in an application, something like that. And that might be one way of dealing with that from a staff point of view. If there's an issue you've got, you know, 24 hours or something to fix it, whatever, which is one way of handling the trivialities. It can't be fixed in 24 hours. It's not true. No, I think there's an opportunity to adjust that stream. Yeah. Look, I think there's a difference between a string check on a reserved word basis, if that's what we're some words like DHC, versus a string check because you pick the term and someone raises an issue because it's political or the gap is made about it or something. Just, yeah.
In the publication, we publish the known reserved list, but we can't publish a complete politically sensitive list. If it's on the reserve list and you publish the reserve list, why wouldn't you reject it?
Yeah.
Automatically. If I file for .exe and then the application it says you can't
file
it.
Yeah. I think that just comes down to, to me, you wouldn't show any technical competence to running the registry pretty soon after I said your credibility is quite blown at that point. Look at that, I think you guys have done some work on the RFP and the wording. I don't want to try and do that again. Just run professionally.
Hey, sorry, Bruce, I just have one quick question. If the intent here, I'm not sure if it's clear, is after this batch process, is it first come, first serve from there, or is there guidance on that part of this, or is it another batch process?
Well, I think the idea is that I'd leave that to staff discretion, basically. But I think this is a way of managing the applications, and my assumption is that after one or two rounds spread over a couple of years, you're then dropping down, okay, I've met this ground full of demand, and then people are just sort of coming up as they go, and I think they'd just be processed in order and proceed. So It's just a staffing issue, I think, yeah. Just on this timing thing, so there's the concept of the time window. Are we okay with those kind of rough days, that there's some longer period to prepare, and then there's some period when the applications are being received? Is that roundabout the right date?
Now, the 6 months, is that just an estimate, or...
Yeah.
6 months seems like... I think Marilyn's right. I think there's going to be a lot of reaction when people do that. So
that's why I'm trying to put some of these things in, though, Chuck, so they can try to create an expectation. I'll put a G in here. Do you think 4 is a better number? They want to just at least set an expectation so people kind of feel what we're talking about. We're not talking about a year.
And if it can be done sooner, I think that would be well received.
I'm just going to be very practical. I'm envisioning that this was improved in February. We had an ICANN meeting in March, which means the staff have to, get oxygen from under the ocean for a while. And then they come back and we've only given them 2 more months to do a highly complex procedure. So
yeah. Well, give me a number though. I just want to get a feel for it. Was it 4 or 6? What do you want to just keep in
mind? I think it's 4 example, 4 months.
Yeah, 2 example, yeah.
But Bruce, also there's a difference here between the first of these batches.
That's exactly right.
And what subsequently happens, yeah. Now, the first is the most difficult to predict, and that's all to do with so many variables. It's as soon as possible.
Yeah.
But also, and then we want a standard notification window for each of the new batches.
Which could be shorter.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to specify that here. Yeah. I think you're right. And again, I think the first batch will take a while to process too.
Yeah.
So as you say, that. And this is similar to the registrar accreditation. When that first started, there was a lot of registrars being accredited, then it drifted off. And then there are other reasons why there were some other batches. Okay, what about publishing in advance? Are we sort of saying that that's stripped out, that we don't try and notify parties during this window?
Yeah,
we've got a shorter window. I think that's cleaner, because then we're not trying to get into giving some of the information and then you get... To do your preparation and then you've got a 30-day window to put it in. I don't think that's really good.
What does close date mean?
That's when the application closed out is shut. So you say, for example, the applications will begin to be accepted from 1st of July 2007, and the close date for those applications is the 30th of July 2007.
1 month.
Yeah. So you're giving them, I'm giving you, 6 months notice or whatever that's the date when the applications are, but where are you?
Is the RFP going to be out sooner than 1 month before closing?
I think the RFP is out at the date. That's a good point. The RFP should be out.
Yeah.
After, I'm talking about start date after...
Okay, you might want to start by where the RFP is.
That's important, I agree.
Yeah.
That start date is after issuing the RFP.
Yeah.
So So we're not suddenly issuing all the documents the day before it's due when they're incomplete. Is that clarified it?
Yeah, because the RFP came out just 1 month prior to close date. I think that's way too short.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yes? Yes?
I'm sorry, yeah. Are we really comfortable with the idea that some of these processes that are going to be needed deal with conflicts and stuff like that are going to be in place with in that time frame parameter? Maybe are we just using hypotheticals for the middle of this year?
Okay.
Yes. All that.
Well, no, I'll just use a minute.
All right. Because my guess is it's going to take a significant period. First of all, somebody is going to have to develop a set of parameters for these people to be working with them, develop some sort of, and even going back to affiliates, in negotiating with WIPO to provide the fee resolution for domain names on the land and the Sunrise deal. It took 60, 90 days to get everything worked out as to how they were going to manage it and deal with it. So I'm just thinking that I'm trying to be realistic with this stuff, you know.
Yes.
Okay.
So the other thing we covered yesterday was resolving string conflicts. We covered that. The other thing we've had in there is if you still have an issue after getting your additional information about the level of support and both applicants need to have the same level of support, that there's a random selection. So that was just picking up the idea that was used with .jobs as kind of a final.
Well, it's the only issue we're missing there, and in comparative evaluation and then also random, which is the same issue perhaps we're missing generally in allocation, is the one of competition. I mean, we're charged with increasing competition in the public interest. So would you at some point not have another level of comparative evaluation to say, if you seem to have identical applications from players who seem to have legitimate communities that they're going to represent, one of those players is significantly more dominant in the market, is significantly dominant in the market at the moment, and the other one is a new entrant, would you not be giving a preference to a new entrant? Well, that's part of our job, isn't it?
So I think that's being in the area of getting winners, as opposed to... But it also says
they're abusing market forces.
They're actually two separate values, aren't they? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, I think we're just overcomplicating if we start adding another major area.
Fundamental, Bruce, it's not a complication.
We're talking about here after we've gone through layers and layers of stuff, and now we're adding that. And you're going to try and... so basically you're essentially not going to use random selection, so I'm starting to do I think is best at that point. And then there's just a circle. But no, I just think we're now right back to where we're
going. You said these are legitimate applications, we compared them, there are communities.
They both have strong support.
And then we're looking at a significant, possibly the most significant public interest matter, which is plurality of competition. And you're either saying we're absolutely neutral to continued dominance in this field, or we have a role to fulfill in providing plurality of competition in this field. You can't ignore that. It's not a competition. If we're not doing that, then what we're doing
is a film. We're looking at it. Let me just take the other layer, okay? The other layer, I've got 100 applications with 50 new registries,
mm-hmm.
and now we're going to make a decision on two words, two people going after the same.
And it's easy. If there's two new entrants, then there's no judgment to make. If there's somebody who is already a major player versus a new entrant, then the decision is easy.
This is a common criteria in an environment where competition is being introduced. And it's certainly a common criteria. Think about a government agency putting out a bid and looking to limit its dependence on a sole provider. They will often put into the criteria a requirement that the service provider have diversity in the equipment providers. And they build that criteria to looking to build competition. They build that criteria into the bid. So looking for, and one of our core values, I agree with Philip, is to advance competition. So it can be an element of the comparison here. How does this, is this a new entrant? Are they going to make an investment in infrastructure? And infrastructure is a key part of stability of the Internet. If we have a dominance of infrastructure, we have a dependency.
I'm not sure how you define a new entrant. I mean, is it somebody that's using an existing, is it somebody that's a new applicant but using an existing registry operator? Is that a new entrant? To kind of toss back something you said to me yesterday, I thought made a lot of sense still. It doesn't scale. I don't think that what you're talking about scales.
There's a chart that the ICANN staff published, which makes it look like, that I'd like to see modified, which makes it look like there are 18 registry providers in the infrastructure space because we don't break apart the management of, well, once we introduce sponsored TLDs, then we introduce the ability to separate the management of the front engine part of the registry process from the back engine.
It's not just sponsored, it's not name, it's not...
Okay, to the question of whether it scales or not, we see CCPLD sometimes operate their own back engine and sometimes they contract with others. So this, I'm not sure I agree that it doesn't scale.
Well, the thing I'm questioning now is not the fact that you want to introduce competition. I'm saying this whole thing is about introducing competition. Well, one of the benefits are that you get competition in the space. And the whole system is intended to introduce competition rather than focusing on one specific aspect of it. That's the only thing I'm looking at.
Right. Yeah. I would just point out that if all we get are applications from MKLLC just from a variety of different names and with a variety of different partners, then we might see a monopoly developing around that one applicant. And I think that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to introduce competition into the namespace.
Right. Yeah, I'm just interested to see how you're going to word this. You know, someone give me some text.
I'd like to make a comment while you mull it over. One is to ensure stability and security, and I think that's what drove the applicants in the last round to sign up with existing registry operators, because that made it very easy to check that box, because that was weighed so heavily, and it made it an easy box to check. And then the other comment is really that ICANN is to promote competition and choice for consumers. So what we want to encourage competition or promote competition. You also, but the other side of that's equally important is at the end of the process, does a consumer have more choices or not? And so that's all a win that takes place.
Balance with the security and stability of the infrastructure.
Well, I think that comes first, and then. But what I'm saying is you could have a existing operator develop a new product that creates more choice for consumers at the end of the day. And I understand what you're saying, and I think it should be a factor that should be weighed. And at the end of the day, what you want is the consumer to come out better with more choices.
Well, it has to be, because the consumer in the superpower world has a choice between Ariel and Bonox, but they're both owned by Procter & Gamble. Help you in terms of increasing the competition if that's your only choice of soap powder.
These are the two core values, and there's five different points that relate to competition. So one is saying we're feasible and appropriate depending on market mechanisms to promote and sustain a competitive environment. So essentially introducing TLD, we're creating a market for doing so. And then I guess what you're focusing on is the second point, Philip, is saying, okay, we're predominantly using market mechanisms here. But if market mechanisms are failing, then you're promoting competition and the registration of names where practical and beneficial to public interest.
And it may not be that they're failing. They may not yet exist. When you're introducing competition, it's, you know, and we've seen this over and over and over in other markets.
Right.
Competition has to emerge.
Can I just talk to you? You want to be very careful writing these rules. If you've got two dot shops and one says it's going to start up and build its own infrastructure,
the other guy says he's going to use the Phillies' back end. And then you give it to the guy who says he's going to start and build his new infrastructure. Does that mean we have to police him for the next 5 years and make sure he doesn't, you know, few months later go and outsource to Verisign or New Level or, whatever, how he's trying to slant the rules, people are going to slant their applications towards that, and they'll promise whatever it is they're waiting. They'll dutifully comply instead of the new shell company to meet the criteria that you're going to give the advantage to, and then 2 months later they'll change.
Yeah, we are in this chat. We've gone through quite a few things. We're dealing with certain conflicts. We're dealing with, we found that these two streams have got fairly equal support, which I don't think is going to be that common. And now we're going to end up just doing, I don't mind doing that, I was just trying to think of the other complicated. Just give me some work. What words do you want to give me there?
This is going to be subjective, so maybe fine-tuning
wise.
Then consider,
there's a whole point tree to try and make it as objective as possible. Yeah. We have a very clear method of determining, so you know in advance what information you need to provide to show your support. That's all very clear. And now we're saying, well, what's better for competition? That's a real sort of vague thing. It's sort of basically making a judgment call. And you wouldn't necessarily know on what basis you're making that judgment call.
Let me throw in a comment that was in the material that we submitted. We absolutely agree with everyone that security and stability is number one, but we made the statement that we don't believe that everybody needs the highest level of security. Every TLD necessarily needs the highest. If you have a minimum standard to ensure security and stability, some TLDs may not need as much, and if we provide that kind of flexibility, then I think it facilitates what some of you are talking about, that you're just going to get all of the existing providers of back-end services, because if people can do something on their own with the clear understanding that they're not providing the best in the world infrastructure supporting it, but it's adequate for their particular TLD. Now that becomes a little more complicated to probably create, but that was the idea behind our recommendation in that regard, is not every TLD needs the best infrastructure in the world to operate, and that's okay as long as there's no negative impact on the security and stability of the bigger system.
Chuck, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's something that I have strong concerns about. I attend many ITU meetings where I sit with people from developing countries talking about the poor quality of infrastructure and the impact it has on their ability then to economically compete. I'm concerned that we be careful not to create a substandard idea, and therefore to run the risk of more fallover of new GTLDs, which then will just create a risk situation or a risk factor, and people won't be willing to run their business or register in the new GTLDs. So I think there's got to be a concern about differentiating and saying some TLDs don't have to be as high quality as others. But if I'm building my business on that name, I need for it to work, and I need to be able to count on it working, or I'm not going to register in that name, therefore I won't have competition emerging.
But some people may not be building a business on their TLD. It may be for fun. Is that inappropriate and unacceptable? I understand, Marilyn, with regard to businesses and commercial interests and so forth, but is it fair to the broader community out there to restrict TLDs to those kinds of operations? I don't know. I mean, I don't have any self-interest here. Verify doesn't have any self-interest, nor do the registries. We just think that, you know, if you're really opening it up to lots of variety and so forth, not everything needs, the gold standard. As long as
there are minimum standards that does not have any negative impact on the businesses and services that you're talking about where commerce is involved and so forth.
So what I put up there, I think really what you're saying is this is going to be a board decision. I don't think this is a staff decision when you're getting down to this level of stuff. It almost comes down, it's not a clear winner. The board will decide and take into account all aspects of their own core values and make it really open. Because other than that, I don't think you define process is just impossible.
In other markets,
I mean, if I was dealing with this in a commercial context and I would say it was not an IT, if I was going out for a major contract, let's say it was more telecommunications infrastructure, and I had two, you know, I put out tender, had four bids, had two that I couldn't really split, and, you know, these are significant contracts, you basically take it up to a board or something like that, and they call it, they just take it, and they might decide, well, you know, for a number of reasons, this is a government within a similar situation. So obviously, the board will decide based on their own mission and core values. Well, but why are you getting one out of that? Because, you know, let's go back and look at the core values. It is one of the core values, and that the overall mission is broader than that. So that, why pick one core value?
The introduction of new registration activity is to do with competition benefits of the
maybe I can put it another way. I think if we have a round of 50 applications and we find out that the vast majority of those are all coming from the back ends of the established GTLD providers and CCTLD providers, I think we would step back and look at this as a somewhat of a failure, that we hadn't allowed any new market entrants to come to play.
I'm not disputing that. What I'm saying is that you're presupposing that that's the case. It could be something different. It may be an issue that you've actually got lots of smaller players, so you're getting lots of competition. But suddenly you've got EDS or an IBM saying that they're putting in the application and that they're going to build a much more robust system or something. And so you might choose based on the fact that they have you might weight it towards security and stability. So you don't know what you've got in front of you at the time, and you've got to look at the overall space. So I'm saying, at this level of decision, I'm saying that you've gone through this whole process and you've got this lockstep, you're putting it up to the board. The board is operating in the best interest of the organisation as a whole, and should take into account that as a whole.
I wanted to bring in something else on this. I could sort of very much support the desire that over the long term you want to increase competition, and that's why we have many rounds. One of the things that I thought we sort of had a presupposition at the beginning was that we wanted to make a predictable process, we wanted to make a finite terminating process on this. We wanted essentially to take the board out of the process of making decisions on these.
Yes.
And so putting that in at the moment is really concerns me more than, I think that you've got multiple rounds to sort of, if you find that you're not getting what it is you want in terms of competition, that's what the next round is for. That's where you do something to encourage. I just don't see putting in the board as a deus ex machina at this point to make this happen.
I think this is an exception, Audrey. I think this would not routinely happen, and I would just say, as we have learned in every other market, every round of competition is dependent upon the first draft. So if we get, and I do think we have to think more carefully about this, and we can, we'll get more comments on this.
some people will feel that they need to partner with an existing big player, and say that lets them focus just on the policy aspects. Mm-hmm. I think that one of our challenges is going to be the awareness and the outreach, a point that you need to make, so that a big infrastructure provider like a Time Warner or an EDS or an NTT or a KDDI thought it worthwhile to bid. And that's going to be dependent on people being aware of the process in time. And those companies take three, I should totally probably comment on this, but I would say it takes 3 to 4 months at a minimum to filter up and hire those big companies to even get them aware of an opportunity like this.
Just before we move off this particular subject, can I also draw everyone's attention to page 30 to 34 of the public comments that specifically address this issue that needs to be taken into account. The question was, thinking about ICANN's responsibility to ensure competition in registered services, do you have any additional comments about how to encourage applications which would serve names which are not served by existing top-level domains? There are four pages of commentary on that. That's one element. The other.
So what are the main? What are the main now? What are the main? What are the main?
Yeah, I'm just drawing people's attention to the fact that public comments have been received on this exact issue.
Yeah.
The other part, which has been brought up in this show of the discussion, is the technical criteria, and there are comments relating to that. But there is also an outstanding call for additional information from the constituencies about appropriate technical criteria, and I have not received any response on that call for additional information, which was released after the Washington meeting. So, if people have further comments to make on that element, that would be good too.
So, I'm conscious that we've sort of gone off on a major tangent here on one very small issue. I'm still saying that Evan's exactly right. We're trying to design a whole system to introduce competition. And then right at the bottom of it, then we're sort of saying, oh, actually, there's no point about any of this, let's just go and ask the board. Or let's go and look at competition or something. It's rhetorical. It's like we're building a system for competition, but now we're using competition as the variable at the end. The whole system's supposed to introduce competition. If the system's not introducing competition, then we provide a system. Yeah, I think that's kind of more of an engineering.
But Bruce, that's exactly my point. There is nothing whatsoever in what we've done so far that would necessarily guarantee competition.
Yes,
and history tells us that the incumbents are likely to be upfront in applications.
No, I'm not sure I'm really following you on that. So starting with you, if we go back to 2000, you had one, and now we have affiliates at year level, at least pretty substantial. We have Core, which runs some, so we have three. And what they have been looking for in terms of getting their scale is by adding utilities to get more scale. And then and then you're presupposing what there'd be no new operators. You're basing that, I think, on the .NET round, which was very focused on technical. But I just don't think you have the evidence to assume that yet. We don't know yet, in other words.
Also, at one point, the registered constituents who submitted in our document is, of course, we agree with competition, so understand that, okay? But we have a statement that ICANN's place is not necessarily to ensure competition or guarantee competition, but to promote competition as best as possible. And then also, something to keep in mind is that, I mean, is the window should not be 3 months we're looking here. I mean, there's nothing stopping .jobs from operating as registering in-house or .travel or any. I mean, look at a 10-year length. You know, it could all be different in 10 years as to who's doing the back end for which DLD in this example. Can't just look at a 3-month window.
Jim and Ken?
Yeah, I'd like to point out that affiliates is an example of that. As if you recall, when affiliates first proposed for .info, we had an outside provider who was providing the registry technical services for us. City area of 2000. Approximately 3 years down the road, we ended up acquiring that company. So forth. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, I would expect to see in any round a significant blend of applications where the registrant would propose providing their own technical back-end services, but I would also expect to see a significant number of applications where the composer would be using existing technical back-end, and I wouldn't be surprised if you saw applications where the back-end providers were organizations like DENIC or NOMNET or
things that get involved also.
Sure. So I think it depends on exactly what you define as promoting competition. You know, creating new companies is not necessarily the most appropriate way of doing it, but rather providing a balance, a global balance, that gives opportunity to companies that have the qualifications.
Yeah. I mean, since you have that type of registration example,
yeah,
like just as in some of the registrations on all rounds, other rounds, they started backing off after that because they thought they had no hope of getting through the opening process. They lost trust that they could ever get done. And this is a registry that's 500,000, or a lot better, higher than that registration is, you know, the registry.
My suggestion
would be... there are players out there today that want to run through this.
My suggestion would be, Bruce, that we go back to them where we look at what target are you proposing to make this time. The thing I would say about D, and maybe we could put it in red, I see D as the exception and rarely that's happening. So maybe
that's right. That's why I'm worrying about that you're going into a comparative evaluation. So if you go to random, which is what we had there, which is what Ray's process had, that actually has a reasonable chance, equal chance of it's going to pick the smaller guy or the bigger guy or whatever. I mean, it's basically why you split the coin of situations. You're saying, you know, I've got down to this point. I don't think I can do any more in terms of judgment. We'll flip a coin because it's probably equally as good by chance than you as you try to pick the winner of the science.
And there's I think that right now I would say as an individual member of the EC, I'd have to make a minority statement on that. I'm not ready to sign up for that, but I am ready for us to move on.
Bruce, just one more comment on the infrastructure providers, the back-end providers. It's important to keep in mind that it's a huge upfront expense, and even more so if you're going to require all providers of registry services to be up to the .NET standard. And so it's not unlikely to use a provider that's already got the infrastructure in place and then transition, like Ken said, over time that Afilias did, just because of the huge investment up front. So from a financial perspective, it makes it more realistic to get more new players in the market if they don't have to do the huge infrastructure investment at the same time that they're doing everything else. Just something to keep in mind as you're thinking about this and you want more players.
And the technical standards will be published, and my view is that they're based on being a minimum check as opposed to competitive. I think the difference with the .NET, it wasn't just a high standard chapter, it was that it was competition amongst those bidders based on that standard. That's really the difference. The actual review said that all of them met the technical standard, and one which met it better than others, and that's what that was about.
I'm not quite sure what happened after the framework was set for from 2000 now, but there one of the criterion differentiating between sponsored and unsponsored was that the sponsors were given significant freedom over their own policies. However, they were forbidden to operate their own registries. So the largest portion of any kind of class of 2,000 applications for an SDLD was the designated registry operator's statement of fitness. So the business surety was supposed to be on the back end, and the policy wisdom was supposed to be on the front end.
I'm just looking at faces of some around this table. This is something that apparently has been relegated to the annals of history. But first time off, that's what it was done. And I can attest to that simply because during the startup phase of that museum, we did have our own registry, which everybody admitted was probably adequate for the purposes of that little domain. But sorry, the ground rules were that we were not going to be a registry operator, and you therefore needed to sign with that admin provider.
I think something that's come out of this discussion is that some sort of policy statement might be appropriate that, you know, go up to the start of the process that ICANN will adequately promote the rounds in order to encourage multi-stakeholder participation and participation in, you know, multinational areas where we generally don't see it anymore. So we're talking about trying to make decisions after the applications are submitted in order to increase competition, but a lot of the increase can be made as
so the rounds are saying that it's a good combined around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. I think that's important. That's what I'm worried about. We're sitting in the start though, that's too short. How do these titles know about it, isn't it?
Yep,
So if I understand right, staff, when we have the strength intention, staff can only select between two or more applications based on the level of community support.
Yes.
We couldn't use competition, we couldn't use geographic diversity, we could use technical competence as criteria for deciding. And then it would come to a coin toss, and now
yes.
None of those factors again would
change. Yes. Yes. That's what
we're doing. Sure, what we sense.
Yes. But, you know, there are others that have a view that, you know, might say that they want to move into that, go back to the full old system of the community.
And keep in mind that by the time you get to that point, you've already determined that they meet some minimal technical criteria.
The question presented to you. You've got two applications, and one is new provider from Africa with gold-plated technical ability and the new entrant, and the other one is a subsidiary of affiliates and has the same number of promised registrants. Those guys would be cool.
Yes. But you still have to get to the stage you've got the same number of registrants that want to use it, which is, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen too often that if you have a solid process around and end up so fast.
Just one more comment on this. It's possible, too, if people know that there's going to be a random selection process if it gets to that point, that that may be added incentive for those that don't want to display chances to work together to come some sort of joint solution.
It's also going to be incentive to put in lots of applications.
If you really want to get that effect, you might put in three applications for it, because they come down to the coin toss between five people.
Yes, but you still have to get all the...
You have to line up that support three times, or shade it three different ways, or have two batches of community people support that application.
Yeah, but I think that's the barrier, that's important barrier, is that they have a very solid process for measuring support. It's verifiable.
Right, that's an identifiable and measurable company.
Yeah, let's say you're a trade association of shopkeepers. You can support three different applications. So you can support the same application of three different shells of the same company for Dot Shop. So if you want Dot Shop, you're going to put in three applications for it. You really want it.
Okay, so you've got three applications. Let's say I've got one. And I put my effort into making sure I've got
the support of as many of those trade associations as possible.
And I put my
effort, I'm going to win based on that.
And I put my effort into making sure I have the same level of support and my support given to all three of my outfits.
So I think going to do the same level of support as well.
Dear association, please send in these two letters. You support this guy, that guy, and the other guy. And then with my two applications that don't do that, I can just pick two different strings. That's
the thing I'm hearing is that you're still competing against. It's not random until after I've got past that phase of support, okay? So I've got four players that are in there, okay? Three of them are owned by the same company, and then there's one other party. That one other party, his sole objective is to have more support than those. Not collectively, but each individual.
So let's say all four of those applicants get different trade associations.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying, I'm thinking is unlikely.
It's unlikely.
Yeah.
So it's 35 and 30 and 25, 30 trade associations. I mean,
but we're also saying you're doing trade associations. I'd go stronger than that and say you need the members of the trade associations to be signing that. Because otherwise you'd be going, you get some first of the trade associations when they don't get contact members, you know, you'll fill it in as long as you pay big cash under the table. And I think you need a more verifiable process than that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of...
You've got to put the work into... What I'm saying, Dan, is the work should go into getting that right so that it's not gainable. In terms of verifiable and you're getting real results from people that... And sure, if someone wants to support more than one application, that's fine. But I think this is a direct... Measurable.
But the evidence is acceptable and the verifiable. And that is a hand wave at the moment is how you construct that.
Yeah.
But that seems to me to even sort of include the evidence is acceptable. If evidence is acceptable, then it isn't the same people being gay.
I'm not saying it's gameable. I'm just saying that's the currency you've established is this type of support. People wage interviews based on how much of whatever it is you create. That's what it's worth. It's not how much money you have or how much time you have.
That's right. We've chosen against the auction model, which is how much money you have, and we've moved towards how much support you have for that field.
So that'll be
the
that'll be the currency of the realm, is this kind of support that you can
carry. That is the currency of the realm, yes, you can.
And so my one concern, though, is when you introduce the main element that you're... Just like we have with the shell registrars, we have all the random elements for these drops. So if we're going to add a random element for these GLD drops, you're going to get multiple applications for that, especially because the guys who don't get the first choice get a free second choice. So it's a free shot at the population.
It's a duplicate. They only get a second choice if it's a duplicate.
So if 10 apply for that shot, the 9 losers all get the second choice free. They can take that shotting or not.
Something there's nothing to prevent people from...
Going for popular GLD and then getting the
back. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The key is the support. So they go for the popular GLD, so they don't have to go where there's their first choice. They have to show the support for that to get it.
Right, so they don't get it on the list unless they can... There's some kind of criteria to get on the list, not just you file an application.
Excuse me, you guys have a three-way conversation going. I can't hear what Marilyn's asking you. And to me it's very relevant because it sounds like Dan just said that it's going to be possible for somebody to put in a second choice similar to what they did in the first round.
What Dan is saying is he's concerned that because we're adding random, you encourage people to put in multiple applications. That's his concern. So he's not in favor of random selection at that point.
No, but he doesn't think that will encourage people to put in multiple applications just to raise their chances.
Can I get an elaboration, though, on the second half of that? Are you saying, in effect, I heard you say that if 10 people apply for that shop, one of them gets it, the other 9 to get their second choice. And that, to me, it really perverts the idea. I think you're going to end up with a huge amount of gain. You're going to get multiple applications for strings, knowing that they can't get that string, but that they'll have the backup. So if I was the case, I'd apply for a string I knew I couldn't get, that I had very low probability of getting, knowing that because I was a quote lucky loser, I'm going to end up with what I really wanted, which I put in as my second choice.
Please believe me, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I think further to Chuck's point and to support what Tim said, if you don't compromise and you insist on going all the way to the coin flip and you lose, that means you're done. You don't go back then and get your second choice. I mean, you've insisted on... Yeah, and so you're done.
You get second choice at mediation
point.
Yeah,
exactly.
Mediation
is not a choice.
Yeah, because as you say, it has to be a penalty if you're out of that round.
Otherwise, you've got the Wild West. You really do have the Oklahoma land rush coming right down the pipe. You will have literally hundreds of applications. And a good percentage of them, we need to build in these safeguards to make sure that this doesn't turn into a speculative deal. The things we talked about yesterday, ensuring that commitments are made to operating the registry, transfers of ownership, stuff like that. Otherwise, it's just going to get games to the end.
So what we're adding there is that those not selected will need to like to transfer the presentation so
that others aren't
registered.
I think there needs to be some discretion. I see scenarios where the second best candidate out of 20 is excluded. I saw a scenario where two companies are sort of in a game of brinkmanship with one another and to see who wins first, and therefore maybe the better negotiator or the one that can afford the better lawyers wins the mediation, because
it's not based on lawyers, it's based on breaching agreement.
Who can argue better in a mediation?
Well, mediation is a compromise. It's more of that.
Well, if there's a compromise that Company A keeps that name and Company B does not get it, that's a compromise of sorts.
So that's agree to that.
They have to agree to it. So
it's not hard to get it. Just mediate.
Right. Yeah. But it's still a game of brinkmanship. If I don't mediate and settle on my choice B, I might get nothing. I've got the expression, but
bear in mind that you're still getting to the next round. You're not really getting.
You make that wrong. No, Bruce just wanted to add, because we've kind of added this whole coin flip in this thing, is for that coin flip process to work, we only allowed one submission per applicant. Isn't there a way to say, you can actually submit more than one application?
Yeah, this is the .eu problem, though. If you actually have one registrar, it must have been 10 or 20 or 100, because that's what you need to do to the land collection process.
Ray, when you said, so the other problem I think with the state of that is that in some cases,
I think we're coming back to board for me.
Yeah, I think
and that's just where it's at for now. Because every time there's been any random process in the internet, there's nearly always been major guns. I agree, but certainly just talking about two parties in this coin flip, but what you're saying is because you're announcing that in the process, that it gets game before you even start. Like two parties in the coin flip cases, we didn't allow people to pretend to be somebody else and have a standing when they're obviously.
I know you'd say that, but I think the stakes weren't as high. That's all I can say. Like, read the rules for .eu and read the rules and look at what happened. Because all those rules are there. Said, we don't allow this, we don't allow that, and it all happened. They've got lots and lots of rules. Look at the outcome, that's all I can say.
Yeah.
There are a couple of other things that I just want to remind you about, because I think it's important to get them clear early on. Yesterday we had discussions about various tests for determining who is most suitable. And I think we need to be looking very carefully at situations, and I'm going to go back to the 2000 round. I do not think it's a good idea to include in any application the concept that pre-registrations in a TLD will enhance suitability, because pre-registrations tend to create expectations. I will use this as an example. There are significant numbers of people who registered .web domains who, if you apply policies that we've used in the past, may very well have deluded themselves into thinking that if .web ever gets accepted, that they are automatically covered in that. And it's, again, a situation where people can be exploited, promises can be made that would not be kept, or could not be kept, just by the very nature. And I think we need to make sure that we have a process that people understand that if we introduce a new top-level domain, that everyone who is in, I will use the qualifying segment, and I hope you understand what I'm saying here. I mean, everybody who is a legitimate member of the community that's being served by this new TLD has an adequate and equitable opportunity to register a domain in that TLD. If it's already gained so that somebody walks through the door with the promise of a million registrations and it ends up being 20 guys who've each registered 50,000 names for speculative purposes, this turns into a gigantic fiasco. So I think it's very important out front to make it clear that we don't... I hope you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, what you're saying, Ken, is that what you don't... This is something that came up in the registrars actually ran Triple S recently, was that you don't want to have some culture where it's part of gaining support. But you're getting priority in registration. So you're saying, if you put your name down for me for .web, as a supporter for .web, then when I open .web, you'll get the, you know, 10.web, for example. It's the registration process has got to be totally separate from a measurement of support, if you like. You're not giving someone a priority.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, there's an expectation that would be a normal LabRush process, and you're offering priority to somebody who makes a nebulous commitment,
So I'll just put that point down. So the process for obtaining support for a TLD does not give a potential registrar any priority in the registration of a certain level.
Dan, you looked at me like,
are you trying to prohibit that practice, or
make
it into account?
I think it's not prohibited, because what's the way done?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
What tends to know is, for example, that the promises. So basically, I'm saying,
yeah. If somebody, in order to raise the money to do a TLD application, promises, makes commitments to sell pre-registrations to raise the
funds. Selling domain names.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm very aware of this problem, because the USFTC severely backed a couple of people over there.
So there's a difference between a letter of support saying, I support your application, versus basically saying, you know, support this, sign this, and I'll give you, you know, whatever's a good thing for web, shop.web or something, you know. And if 10 supports mine, I'll give you football.web and so on. You don't want that situation.
Still supposed to view that the senior staff is supposed to investigate whether that applicant has given or intends to give priority to anybody, or
In the first round, and all you have to do is insure. It's very easy to insure by ensuring that there's an adequate process for initial registration that presumes that there's no preferences given.
Let's say I'm Dot Blogger.
Yeah.
I already have a million sub-registrants under blogger.com, and I want to give them all priority. They will get their name Dot Blogger if I do this, and they all send me letters of support saying, we should give this guy Dot Blogger because I support him. Do we...
When I fill out my application, I cannot give them...
That's right. That's correct, because for all intents and purposes, what you would be saying then is, here's how the initial registration period comes. Let's assume for the element that we have a sunrise for legitimate trademark people and stuff like that. Then right after the sunrise, all the guys who signed my letters of support for Dot Blogger automatically have preference, and they can register their stuff. And then, oh, by the way, the public, if there's anything left over that might be interesting that you feel you can use, I just don't see that being a catch.
I don't actually see a problem with someone going out and saying, look, I've got 500,000 people who are pre-registered. I just want to put them right into the zone file. Or AOL coming up with, like, Dan's example and saying, I want .AOL, and our method of naming is going to be everyone gets username.AOL. And look, we've already got them. That's how we're going to register it, and these are all our supporters.
Well, that's different, because what you've done there is you're not using the UTL.
So D as an inducement to get somebody to join it. I mean, the same idea with AARP. ARP wanted to set up a deal and hypothetically give something to each ARP member. That's a defined community. But offering free registrations as an inducement for support, to me,
As long as it's disclosed. As long as it's disclosed. You know, go ahead, sign us the support, show us your name. As long as you're first in time, you'll get it. But if we don't get the TLD, you get nothing. As long as it's disclosed, there's no fraud there. Perhaps collecting fees, perhaps not being upfront about what the process was, but, you know, this is one of those things where disclosure and just pretty much cures all. I don't see any problem with someone going out and saying, you know, I want to, you know, show us the support and show us what you would like in the TLD.
So if I want to set up a new TLD, and let's suppose we're talking about an open TLD, and I went to you and I said, Brett, show me support, I'm guaranteeing you're going to get Brett.Elba. Well, what about the other Bretts of the world who might want Brett.Elba, who are never even given the opportunity to do this, you know? I'm talking about an open TLD, unlike a .com or info. I'm just saying that I think the presumption is that at the get-go, everybody has an equal opportunity to register every domain with the exception of those being accepted out via some sort of a summit. Sure, you made a deal with, you got a deal it was fully disclosed to you, but the point is, I've automatically preempted all the other breaths in the world who wanted .Evo, because you have to be an insider.
I think we're trying to draft a rule that I think is not generally applicable just to handle what may be the IO design pre-registrations in .web from 5 or 6 years ago, and I, you know, that's a single case.
No, the contrary is not the one I'm talking about. I'm talking about using inducements to get support. I am the design has got registrations for the last 6 years that are there. I'm talking about if you're thinking about setting up a new TLE and you went to a group of people and offer them free registration privileges or in exchange for either
But this doesn't bother me in the least. I mean, in fact, I would think that coming to ICANN and saying, you know, I published on my website that I was thinking about having this .xyz TLD, and I asked people to show me that they would support it by telling me what the domains they would get, and now I'd like to just give them these domains if I get it, and here's my 500,000 people. Why isn't that an assurance to ICANN that there's actually a market there and it's going to be successful right
now? Well, in all honesty, we're trying to be indignant that it was registered in the public comments and affiliated each one of the registrars to 10 domain names that relate specifically to their business, and the whole world community thought that this was just terrible, that there would be some sort of preference given to registrars prior to the land rush, that they would be denied the opportunity. So all I'm saying is, if people are raising hell about something like this in the past, some of them are saying, well, if we don't care what we bought about it before, we're going to do it now.
I'm looking here is basically that if there's not a clear winner, then board approval based on ICANN emission and core values, taking into account this is just text over the core values, stability, blah blah blah, and introducing and promoting competition with registration of domain owners, public domain owners.
I have one last comment, not anymore on the announcement, but just maybe this is something we do in this other consultation. You might want to check with the board about whether they let you put in this position of...
I don't think anyone wants to be put in this position, Dan.
They're going to be lobbying this business.
And the game is going to be... Well, do you want to... I'll substitute it with Dan Heller if you want to take
one. When do we move P from random to...
Because I just think that... Well, I just sit there and I talk to them to read the room. It just seems that is the direction we're going.
Oh, I read the room in a completely different way.
I should actually take a
straw poll or something.
Sure. But how many people this was a resource after we've looked at clear support. Let's have a sort of straw poll of hands of those that prefer a random versus something that's just going to take into account over another thing. Yes, but the question is random or group beauty contest at this stage?
Yes, random
beauty. Yeah. But all those that support the original wording of yesterday, which was random, please raise your hand.
Which
is random? Okay. All those that support beauty contest at this stage? Yeah.
A non-terminating beauty contest.
It seems to be more towards just the board process and the moment at this stage. I just think it's, you know, whatever we do here, we're going to have to try the first round and we're going to have to review it at the end of the day. Yeah, I think we're trying to work out how many applications we have, what they are. We simply don't know. We certainly don't know whether we're going to be creating a lot of competition out of this or not. So I think we've got to be careful that we just have something that's a reasonable compromise. We'll get this round through and we review it. We build into this process like other things, a review process, basically.
We just at the end of this, we need to say.
Last thing. You don't have geographic diversity as one of the criteria the board should look at. Is that intentional or is that valid?
This would be another place for the minority comments will be about, even from people that don't have constituency.
If you can give me the core value, I'm happy to just help you. That's what I was saying. I think you need to take it. Once you get to the point of these two things look pretty much the same, and then start to look it up and back, there can be any other. Which one? Is that the one? So, taking into account basically that text now, is that text now? I'll just put including rather than making it. So it's like our mission core values and including those things. And really the incentive here should be to try and reach a compromise amongst those that are putting in the application before you get to this.
Okay.
This is actually
increasing. Well, that logical just has to be mine. I know that the group went the other way, so I'll have to write in a minority, but my prediction is, as long as you know you're going to go to the board at the end and you get to play politics, you're going to let yourself drop through to me. And I can,
well,
and Laura's going to find it.
You're going to lose your chance. You pay $50,000 or whatever it is, and you lost them.
Exactly. So
someone's got more community support than you, that you've lost. Remember? So that's... there's a lot of gambling going on there, because the other party in here can get... it's got strong community support, will beat you anyway, because it doesn't get to the stage.
But it allows you... it gives you an advantage on playing politics, even on the community support, because you know you're going to get to a board decision, and if you...
Because if you don't get the community support, you won't get to the board decision, you've already lost it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
But remember that this is after Steve, this is not instead of Steve.
Yeah, but I believe that the position that will put ICANN in on me in terms of doing that adjudication of what's verifiable, measurable, and whatever, will have a larger political pressure on it.
Yeah.
Because there's a board decision waiting to happen if you get called equal. So the pressure on ICANN to call them equal increases. Because what you're dropping to is a board.
Are you saying the staff
I'm saying the pressure on the staff to hand it to the board as opposed to taking the heat when something is difficult to objectify.
I think all we can do is try and
see
how we go.
Okay. Bruce, just one last question. During the mediation step, is there the opportunity for one of the applicants to switch strings? Is that still in the game?
That's in mediation. That's in B, which is where we hope people will resolve the issue. Yeah. And then C is a process to make sure this will identify who's got the most support in a verifiable way. And that should be, we've got to design that such objective and hidden answer. And it's only if they're so close that we have to go to that scenario.
When you got to G, then you couldn't honor a compromise, or you couldn't come up with a kind of compromise like you take football, you take Australian football.
That's right, yeah. So unless you do that, you've got to make it
painful.
It's got to be painful, that's what I said.
So, basically you lose all your play your dough. In other words, you play your cash at that point.
Yeah.
And your investment, and all the work in getting the user support and
everything. Yeah.
Okay. Alright, contractual stuff. Let's just have a 10-minute break. 10-15 minute break.